Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
We were able to add some context to this whole NOSHA Act, right? Nullify the Occupational Safety and Health Act. We have a statement from the bill's sponsor, and there's only one sponsor, apparently. Joe, Representative Biggs out of Arizona 5th District, and here it is. Open source, non-copyrighted, that sort of thing.
Hi, Andy Biggs here from Arizona's 5th Congressional
Andy
District.
Andy Biggs.
I recently reintroduced legislation called the Nullify the Occupational Safety and Health Administration Act of 2019. It's for this session. And you might be aware that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration Act was passed in 1970 under the Nixon administration. And the Nullify Occupational Safety and Health Administration Act has been around since 2021. And I started that bill in 2021 because the Biden administration, during COVID, imposed an unconstitutional standard of requiring private businesses to require of their employees a vaccine. So he imposed a vaccine mandate on private employers, and he did that and used the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration to do that. Turns out the Supreme Court said that's unconstitutional, which is what some of us were saying at the time. Now, I get it. I have constitutional concerns about the federal regulation of private workplaces. I think most Americans who read the Constitution also have those similar questions. And in 22 states, the federal regulation of private workplace safety has already been granted. Arizona is one of those states. So we've been approved to regulate our workplace safety standards at the state level. That's from the federal government. And we first received that approval in 1985. But Arizona has consistently maintained higher safety standards than the federal government. Yet when Arizona refused to bend to the unconstitutional COVID-19 vaccine mandate, Biden's OSHA retaliated, threatening to revoke Arizona's ability to operate under its own state plan. Even the United States Supreme Court struck that down. It's not the first time that OSHA threatened Arizona with revocation, and it won't be the last. And Arizona is not the only state. The federal OSHA has meddled in every state, and even in states that have higher occupational safety health standards, like Arizona does, we are always subject to federal meddling that, in some cases, and frankly, in most cases, is unconstitutional. In the final months of the Biden administration, OSHA proposed establishing a one-size-fits-all heat rule, for instance. This would have placed new federal regulations and penalties on outdoor work when temperatures hit 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, I want you to understand what that means. Today is February 4th, 2025. The high in Phoenix is going to be 84 degrees. That means what we consider to be a pleasant day to be working outside, playing outside, and just moving around outside would have special regulations imposed upon us by OSHA. That is the one-size-fits-all mandate when you allow a federal government bureaucracy to control your occupational safety health standards. It makes no sense to set a uniform national standard for heat. Phoenix experiences more than 200 days a year above 80 degrees, while states like New Hampshire and the Northeast experience only 9 days on average. State and local officials and employers have more experience with temperature-related solutions, and we are better equipped to ensure safe, practical working conditions on the ground. I'm confident that the Trump administration won't proceed with OSHA's misguided effort, and that will allow Arizonans to decide for ourselves how best to manage workplace safety in the Arizona heat. In the spirit of President Trump's efforts to reduce the size and scope of government, and in recognition that the 10th Amendment to the Constitution reserves to the states and the people powers not delegated to the federal government, and further recognizing that there is no authority in the current Constitution for the existence of the federal OSHA, I urge my colleagues to consider returning these powers to the states. And that's why I'm introducing OSHA. Thank you.
Okay, so that gives us a little bit more of that context that we were always talking about with that, right? Context drives behavior. That's his context. There is an article today from Time Magazine. I just had it. Hold on. From Time Magazine. That talks about this. Now, let me get it back on. I think I closed it out. Here it is. Right, and it's title of the article is "What is OSHA and why do some Republicans want to disband it?" The article is by Jamie Ducharme. I think that's how you say it. Ducharme, and it gives us a lot of the information that we already know if you're a regular listener or you're in the safety world. It covers pretty much what Biggs had said here. And here's some excerpts. Sir. He is not alone among Republicans in criticizing OSHA. However, last year, an Ohio contractor, with the support of 23 attorneys general from Republican state, asked the Supreme Court to hear a complaint arguing that OSHA's far-reaching authority is unconstitutional, the Hill reported. Although the Supreme Court did not take up the case, conservative Justice Clarence Thomas called the question at his heart undeniably important. By reintroducing the bill, Biggs is trying to further Trump's administration's goal of reducing government size and scope, stop federal meddling in workplaces, and turn regulatory powers over to the states. So this is comments from former Deputy Secretary of Labor Michaels here. All right. There would be a race to the bottom, Michaels says. Without a legal requirement to do so, companies might decide not to expend their time, effort, or money necessary to keep staff safe, especially if their competitors aren't doing so. What would be the evidence to protect workers from dangerous exposures, Michaels asks. State regulations could fill some void. 22 states or territories currently operate federally approved OSHA state plans. But Michaels says it would be a mistake to rely on state-level regulation alone. Current law does not require states to regulate workplace safety. It says only that if states choose to do so, they must set policies that are at least as effective as those spelled out by a federal OSHA. Even still, that doesn't always happen. Arizona previously had an OSHA state plan, but Michaels knows that his policy had previously conflicted with the stats set by federal OSHA, including around fall protections for residential construction workers. The safest way to protect workers is to maintain national workplace safety standards. Now, my thinking on this, does OSHA need some reform? Absolutely. After what we're seeing over the last few days, I would think so. With what's going on with Doge there under Elon Musk. I mean, there is some review. There needs to be some reform. I think we could all say that. But right now we have federal OSHA in how many states? We know that it's like the bastard child of the family here, a family federal regulations, federal infrastructure, regulatory world, underfunded, overmandated, and everything else along that way. So my question would be this. My experience is this. I'm not going to even ask, I'm going to make a statement. We have federal OSHA. We have companies. I can guarantee you I can go into any workplace and come up with 45, 50 violations. What's going to happen when you don't have federal OSHA? Miraculously, all the workers are going to give pushback to their employer and say, why aren't we doing this? Employer is going to say, there's the door. You're being insubordinate. Why aren't you supplying hard hats? Don't have to. There's the door. Safety glasses, there's the door. And this is the way they are. Right now they're not even doing that. I'm an OSHA outreach trainer here. I'm not bragging. I'm making a statement. We have people that have never been through outreach training who are under the impression that it's okay to take one for the team, for the employer. Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it. Take one from the employer. Get hurt. Don't report anything. You're going to lose your job. You name it, they got it. They're not wearing PPE. Their safety plans, forget about it. Hazard risk matrices, like we talked about last night. No, it doesn't happen. Do it on the state level. You have people, on the state level here for years, Representative Biggs says, well, the COVID-19 and all that. Okay, great. That may have been the latest thing that you disagreed with. But in Arizona, they were. I went through some of the violations the other day with Arizona. Well, they were seeing that get recorded by federal OSHA. What would be a serious thing with a fine, guess what, Arizona, no problem, zero. That was the other thing. The OSHA fines were not, the Arizona citations were not in line with the federal citations with that. Again, we'll keep an eye on it where it's going because it's hitting the news every day here, and we're going to be giving as accurate of a report as we can with it, with that. Some of the other things. Now, there are reports, right, on federal spending on media outlets. The GAO was ordered by Trump today to just cancel out stuff with the media. So the spending is through USAID. This is a Meta conglomeration of articles, but an agency that has been put on notice is being shut down or at least radically modified. What revealed this week was the expenditures of millions of dollars on media organizations. Those cited included the New York Times, Politico, and the parent company Wall Street Journal, and AP and more. But that's over, according to with that, you know, we have basically, according to the president, we're sending money over to that. Now, some of the reports you've seen, a lot of these are subscription services. So, for example, subscriptions to the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and other things. And this was from DOGE today, Department of Government Efficiency. Here, I'm imagining this is open source. So one, it's on their X account. Number two, it's a release from the federal government. So I imagine I'm allowed to read this without, attribute it. In the last 2 weeks, GSA has revealed 23 internal directives and policies totaling 74,727 words, including a 400,890 word policy that outlined GSA's vision to build a high-performing, culturally competent workforce that represents the diversity of the American public, values a workplace culture of inclusive and belonging, and is accessible and equitable for the full participation and advancement of all people. This was from this morning, today, 78 contracts were terminated for convenience across DEI non-government, this is them, I'm reading, across DEI non-performing media and consulting categories, including one for groundwater exploration and assessment in the Islamic Republic of Mauritania. Approximately $110 million in total savings. Treasury leadership verified the New York Times contracts are canceled today. All right, and we have all different types of stuff here. There's NASA spent $500K on Politico subscriptions. A lot of money in there. Now, that may be related to the exact work that they do. So, for example, if you're a private health and working for a private company in your organization and you're doing health and safety, what are some of the subscriptions you might have that you charge off to the company? It may be more advantageous to go through some kind of procurement process to do that. I know of organizations where everybody gets out of hand, where everybody has their own account for something when you could probably consolidate things. Is that simply that, or is this something else? Because according to one story that we have here, right. Hold on. Here it is. I don't have this story here anymore, but it's along the lines of, you know, everybody has their own personal accounts here, and maybe not necessary with this for their job. What else we got here? Let's take a brief commercial break. I'll get organized here and I'll be right back.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzo, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzo and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
So this is Elon Musk's Doge is feeding sensitive federal data into AI and target cuts. Representatives from Elon Musk's U.S. Doge service have fed sensitive data from across the Education Department into artificial intelligence software to probe the agency's programs and spending, according to two people with knowledge of the team's actions. The AI probe includes data with personally identifying information for people who manage grants, as well as sensitive internal financial data. The two people said they described Doge activities at the Education Department on the condition of anonymity due to fear of retaliation. So basically, they're using AI to assess things. Hopefully, it's better than some of the other AI models we've seen out there. With that, I don't know what to say here, other than what does AI do in this situation? It categorizes and looks for patterns. And often you get no context. So hopefully they're making their correct decisions based on the AI. So here's another one. Smartphone companies should introduce kill switches and devices to combat the epidemic of muggings and thefts. The Home Secretary, and this is out of the UK, has smacked police chiefs demands that the phone companies have easy-to-use safety features, allow them to be disabled as soon as they are stolen. Here, I guess that's a good thing. Big problem in Great Britain with mobile phone thefts. Doji Saffer resigns over racist posts. So, basically, if you're a racist in our society, you're probably going to get found out. And what happens is, the younger folks think that stuff that they post online ain't going to come back to haunt them. I know several young people involved in sports, and they were told not to have social media at all. And if they did, they were to post only sports-related stuff. Right? I consulted with a young man. He's a freshman in college who recently opened up a LinkedIn account. And I said, look, this is what you do. You post one story a week that's relevant to what you're doing, what you're studying. Maybe make a couple of contacts on there and things. Maybe you want to comment on it in an intelligent way. And you build up so when you're ready to graduate and you get a job, then you have a little network built in. That's how I would do it. But if I'm advising my children right now, I have that are getting into social media, at least watching things, do not post anything online. Just don't do it with that. Be careful who you follow. I'm not mentioning the gentleman's name. He posted last July, I was racist before it was cool, according to one of the Wall Street Journal. You can, and then he had other things on there. I'm not going to even repeat on this on the airwaves here. But anyway, he was a local guy here from Rutgers University. He graduated. Okay, moving right along. White House preparing to order, this is from the Wall Street Journal, White House preparing to order to cut thousands of federal health workers. And the executive order could come as soon as next week, according to sources. White House is working on an executive order to fire thousands of U.S. Department of Health and Human Service workers, according to people familiar with the matter. Under the order, the FDA, CDC, and other health agencies would have to cut a certain percentage of employees. The order could come as soon as next week, after workers have an opportunity to take a buyout. The buyout has been put on hold. Right, with that. And this is from Associated Press, as Trump pushes the limits of presidential power, the courts push back. A familiar pattern has emerged since President Donald Trump returned to the White House less than 8 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, I'm sorry, hold on. He makes a brash proposal as his opponents file a lawsuit, and a federal judge puts the plan on hold. For some reason, we're not playing here on Safety FM. Hold on. All right. Now the question is whether the court rulings are a mere speed bump or an insurmountable roadblock for the Republican president, who is determined to expand the limits of power, sometimes by simply ignoring the laws. This is according to the AP. Although Democrats may be encouraged by the initial round of judicial resistance, legal battles are only beginning. With that, and you know, the courts have been politicized up to a certain point, is at least, well, that's what the accusation is. According to the other side, they have the authority to do this. With that, a federal judge in Boston paused nationwide the Trump administration's offer of buyouts to federal employees less than 11 hours before the deadline for the workers to accept the deal. Judge George O'Toole Jr. said that his injunction pausing the plan would continue till at least the court hearing on Monday, when he would consider arguments. So I guess they're working through the weekend on this one. Here, yes, now we're into safety news. Elon Musk's rocket explosion caused masses of dangerous chemicals to pollute the atmosphere. SpaceX's seventh test flight was destroyed less than 10 minutes after launch. May have rained a significant amount of metallic dust down in the atmosphere. Scientists have revealed that the rapid disassembly, aka explosion, of Elon Musk's SpaceX Starship in mid-January may have released significant amounts of air pollution into the Earth's atmosphere. Again, the rocket blew up 9 miles in. So do they have hard data on here? This is an article from the Daily Star here. No, it might have. It plunged the Earth through the atmosphere and may have generated 45 metric tons of metal oxides and 40 metric tons of nitrogen oxides. Nitrogen oxides are known for the damage to the ozone layer. University College London atmospheric chemistry researcher Connor Barker, who recently published an inventory of rocket emissions and pollutants from satellite re-entries in the journal Nature, posted the estimates on his LinkedIn profile, but stressed that they are a rough number. I mean, this was one of the things that came out, right? Oh, God. I was talking to Paul Danielichek out of Woodbridge, New Jersey, a local political guy, and we're going to be having an interview with him in the very near future. No, I was talking to him, and he was, and we were just laughing over all the stuff we've been through together. And in the 1980s, now this is my way back mission, we didn't talk about this today. My father always commented, what's the deal here with every time there's a space shuttle launch, it seems like we have bad weather for 2 weeks. I don't know, and I think it was just coincidence, but remember, even in solid rocket boosters with this stuff, what do you have? You have aluminum oxides and ammonium perchlorate in a lot of these solid rocket boosters that they use for the space shuttle. Here, I did a cleanup related to this, so that's all I'm allowed to say. Okay, so with Doge, right? Now, Doge, they hired people that have convicted hackers that are really good with computers, I guess. And one of the concerns is, and this is out of Wired Magazine, is that experts question whether a certain individual, a Doge staffer who has gone by the name Big Balls online, would pass the background check typically required for to access sensitive U.S. government systems. Big Balls, who works for Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency, has access to sensitive U.S. government systems, so this professional online history called into question whether he would be passed a background check, typically required to obtain security clearances, security experts said. The person, a 19-year-old high school graduate, established at least 5 different companies in the last 4 years, entities registered in Connecticut, Delaware, the UK, most of which were not listed on his now-deleted LinkedIn profile. He worked at another company. I don't know. We'll see what it is here. No, this is what happens when you do things in a hurry. International Business Times. U.S. cattle herd continues to drop new record low. Experts are waiting for indicators that signal the beginning of the expansion phase of the cattle cycle. I didn't know there was such a thing. The USDA's January cattle inventory report showed a slight decline in the cattle herd nationwide, reaching record low levels. And it was down by 1% from last year. And the beef herd has shrunk 40% since 1975, the smallest size since 1961. That probably explains why the beef is so high. Beef cows have calved at a record low. And while replacement heifers will, or heifers, also decrease indicating continued contraction in the cycle. But again, record Fed steer prices and ongoing trade uncertainties and choices, will, you know, things are tough all over, even for the cattle. Here's another one. Boffins rejoice. I don't know what that is. As chicken grown entirely in a lab waits UK shelves in the world first. The revolutionary chicken bites, which Boffins claim have all the health benefits of regular chicken, are only available at one location now. And we have a picture here on the website. It says cultured meat, lab-grown chicken. Chicken meat grown entirely in the laboratory is now officially on sale in the UK in what is being called as a world first by its developers, the sci-fi snack, which is made without farming or killing any animals. It's apparently just as tasty and healthy as the real thing. Don't worry too much. You won't be biting into a portion of lab-grown chicken anytime soon. And it's only been available for pets. I have very discerning cats. I don't know if they would eat this. You know, which is kind of funny because what are their names? Neo and Trinity from The Matrix. And this is like The Matrix meal here, right? Chicken thing, bites grown in a lab. Now, all of the chicken was grown, so to speak, from one single egg sample, which means that in theory, the Boffins behind the product could keep growing more and more forever. What are the Boffins? I don't know. Now, do I think this is important technology? Actually, I do think this is important technology for the future. Imagine going into Mars. You're not going to be able to carry all the food you can, but maybe you could grow the food you can like this. Might be an applicable technology. This might be applicable to that type of thing. I see stuff, I don't know what it takes, but food shortages in the military and things with the military actions extended, things of that nature, Navy. This might be a good alternative, or at least an acceptable alternative. Here's one from TheExpress.com. A bird flu panic as newer, deadlier strain emerges, humans at risk of more severe illness. Six cattle farms in Nevada have tested positive for bird flu, and which has a more severe impact on humans. A newer strain of H5N1 bird flu, by the way, birds, most of the flu out there is some form of bird flu, has spread to six dairy herds in Nevada, according to the state's Department of Agriculture. A new strain, D1.1, has been connected to serious infections in humans, though it is different from the strain B313 that has been detected in other dairy herds throughout the country. The newer strain was first detected in birds and people who came in contact with infected birds. According to the CDC, around 957 dairy herds and more than 153 million poultry have been affected by types of bird flew in the United States. This is why you have the high egg prices. I mean, we were talking to people today where people are, with the eggs, not buying eggs. It is what it is. They're looking for egg alternatives. I don't know. They can reproduce a chicken like this. Maybe they can do an egg, too. Trump team considers housing detained migrants in container offices. This is off of Semaphore. The Trump administration is in talks with a private shipping container company to provide temporary space to house and process thousands of migrants slated for deportation, according to people familiar with the matter. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is in discussions with a company that you've all heard of. You deal with office trailers. Now, leasing the company's mobile structures to house undocumented detainees, people said. The company's products are commonly used as construction site storage and office space. And they're actually very good quality, too. Again, this sounds like the whole FEMA thing after Hurricane Katrina with the FEMA trailers here. I don't know. Might be... I mean, you don't want to treat people like animals because they might, what are you going to get in the end? People acting like animals. So might be a reasonable thing, right? This is off of Axios. Here, Brittany Gibson, Trump's ice trees freeze. Hundreds of immigrants under the catch and release. Donald Trump's administration has used the catch and release program to free 461 undocumented immigrants from custody since he took office, partly because of limited detention space in the U.S. immigration facilities. During his campaign, Trump repeatedly criticized Biden's administration use of catch and release. You got to do what you got to do. The released immigrants make up less than 6% of the roughly 8,000 undocumented people arrested since January 21st. And, you know, they're just waiting for things to catch up with itself. Top secret. U.S. spy plane is caught making a mysterious trip to cartel stronghold. The flight path of the U.S. spy plane shows it conducted a mysterious mission over the Gulf of California. Okay, now, my brother and I had this conversation. How many people are going to call it the Gulf of the previously known Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America? I don't know. Have you been updating your language lately? The U.S. government has, right? So the Gulf of California and Mexico this week. Tracking data captured by U.S. Air Force RC-135 River Joint Reconnaissance Aircraft taking off from Foote Air Base in Nebraska on Monday, flying southwest into California. The River Joint and then headed south along the western coast of the Baja California Peninsula in Mexico, moved north into the Gulf of California, and returned to the base on Tuesday. The aircraft appeared to stay in international airspace while operating near Mexico. It did not reach the end of the Gulf that is blocked by Mexico's territorial water. They're just going, they're just looking around, according to all accounts here. Now, this is out of the U.S. Sun. Chopper mystery. The Black Hawk safety system was turned off before the D.C. plane crash, Ted Cruz says, as flights in airport finally cut. The Black Hawk and its automatic, this is from the crash last week. The Black Hawk had its automatic dependent surveillance broadcast turned off during the horrific midair collision, Senator Cruz, the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, said. Right? So Cruz gave the update to reporters after a closed-door briefing by the NTSB. He said it's unclear why the helicopter turned off the key's text system, which helps the aircraft determine its position. This was a training mission, so there is no compelling national security reason the ADS-V to be turned off, Cruz said. Right? NTSB told the U.S. Senate they refused to speculate on Cruz's comment as the Black Hawk hasn't been recovered from the wreckage in the Potomac River yet. So here we have, let's take another commercial break here.
And the streets we tread, beeping lights and wings of chrome, guiding paths as we roam. In New Jersey skies, they hover high, whispers carried
your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
So here we have, this is the only thing from the Department of Labor here for this week. Probably should do a share screen on it. Why don't we? In the week ending February 1st, the advance figure for seasonally adjusted initial claims is 219,000 people. I think they're going to have 40,000 more next week. That's how many people took this VIAT. An increase of 11,000 from the previous week's revised level. The previous week's level was revised up by 1,000 from 207,000 to 208,000. The four-week moving average was 216,000, an increase of 4,000 from the previous week's average. And this is what it is, Department of Labor. I don't know what happened here. Who ordered them just not to, I mean, did the person quit or, wasn't an appointee with this stuff and they're not there anymore? Just everything stopped. I don't know. That's going to be a question on that. And it goes into different things here. So that's from the Department of Labor on there. This is from the same thing. Go back before I get into trouble here. Yeah, and the BLS website. There's a lot of good information. I hope that they retain some of this information in the future here. Productivity increased 1.2% in the non-farm business section in the fourth quarter of 2024, right? With that, unit labor costs increased by 3%, seasonally adjusted annual rates, and manufacturing productivity increased by 0.8% and hit labor costs increased, unit labor costs, increased 3.3%. Here you go. Business career options, outlook, wages, and entry requirements. Here, good thing here to measure the trends because this is what the so-called experts deal with here. Just a lot of information on everything here. US EPA, we'll be going through some of this stuff. Careers at EPA. Well, guess what? I think not so much. Here we have some administration at the EPA going around. Let's see what we got going on at the EPA. US EPA, by the way, we're usually 3 or 4 days ahead of the mainstream media on a lot of this stuff. We talk about government stuff. US EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced that President Trump has appointed Scott Mason IV to serve as the 14th Regional Administrator of the EPA's South Central Region, also known as Region 6. Mason will lead the implementation of President Trump's environmental agenda in Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas, when with 66 tribal nations. We are putting together a high-caliber team at the EPA comprised of experienced individuals committed to our core mission. I'm excited to welcome back Scott Mason to the EPA, this time to serve as a Regional 6 Administrator. Scott brings with him over 20 years of government experience at all levels, as well as having served as EPA's Director of American Indian Environmental Office. He's the right person leading Region 6, and going on and on and on. And we have people praising him and everything else going on and on and on. Our next appointee is Region 2 Administrator Mike Martucci. All right, so the previous administrator apparently is not there anymore. He was there for a long time, right? Today, U.S. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced that President Donald J. Trump has appointed, I'm sorry, I got the agencies mixed up. I'm thinking OSHA. As far as I know, he's still there. As Regional Administrator for EPA Region 2, Mike is overseeing the EPA's work to carry out important priorities on the administration's environmental agenda and protect the people of the region, covering New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and U.S. Virgin Islands, and 8 federally recognized Indian nations. As a businessman, state senator, and community leader, Mike Martucci has proven he is committed to service, said EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin. In the New York Senate, he championed legislation aimed at improving our environment and advancing conservation. Mike brings a wealth of private and public sector experience and is exactly who we need leading Region 2. I'm excited to have him aboard. And with that, and Jim Macy, appointed the EPA Region 7 Administrator. Today, and this is right from, and I'm sharing this, right? Yes. Hold on, I hate it when these pop-up ads, come on. Jim Macy, appointed former NDEE Director to lead EPA's Heartland Region. Today, the U.S. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced that President Trump has appointed Jim Macy to become EPA Region 7 Administrator. Macy will lead the implementation of the President's environmental agenda in Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, and 9 tribal nations. With decades of experience working to protect our energy and environment, Jim Macy is the right person at the right moment to lead Region 7. It is an honor to be appointed by President Trump to implement a common-sense approach to protecting clean air, water, and land while promoting economic development. And it goes on and on. And what did he do? Prior to joining the EPA, Macy was appointed by then-Governor Pete Ricketts to lead the Nebraska Department of Environmental Quality in 2015. And in 2018, Macy also served as the interim director in the Nebraska Department of Energy, guiding the merger of these two agencies to become Nebraska Department of Environmental Energy in 2019. So the DEQ and Nebraska Department of Energy merged. This is not, you may say, well, that sounds weird. Not so much. When I graduated college way back in the day, New Jersey had the same setup with their where the Department of Energy of New Jersey merged with the DEP, and then it was eventually phased out. I forget exactly the circumstances for that. Going on, yeah, you know, experienced person, right? With this, so we'll see how this goes. Real simple. We'll see how this goes with things as we go along here. Nothing going on at the Department of Energy. Voice of America. Now, I have a feeling, my own prediction here, no one else's, that the president may say we already have a news service called VOA, right? Voice of America News. Why are we paying any of these other news outlets with that? And I expect there to be a change here. The VOA used to only be available to foreigners. Now it is available to anyone, and it's open source, which is why we often read stories here. Today, President Trump attended the National Prayer Breakfast. U.S. President Donald Trump said Thursday that his relationship with religion had changed after a pair of failed assassination attempts last year, as he advocated a national prayer breakfast at the Capitol for Americans to bring God back into our lives. Trump joined a Washington tradition of more than 70 years that brings together a bipartisan group of lawmakers for fellowship. So, also to speak at the separate prayer breakfast at Washington Hotel sponsored by a private group. I really believe you can't be happy without religion, without that belief. Now, I actually have a little bit of, at the beginning of the show, it says I'm not involved in these stories, at least not most of the time. I have a little bit of an inside insight here, and that is Trump, when he lived in New York back in the 90s, he used to go to a Dutch Reformed church known as the Marble Collegiate Church. If you remember Norman Vincent Peale from back in the day, The Power of Positive Thinking, that was his church, Dutch Reformed. And it continues to this day. My wife's family were members of that church, and specifically her grandmother used to talk about Donald Trump sitting behind her in church. What a nice young man he was with that. Neither here nor there. I never met her. I never spoke to her. But that's what the family story was, that they actually knew each other and used to go to church together. Not together, but, you know, they used to attend the same church, and he was usually sit behind her with that or, you know, in that area. Now, if you're not a church grower, often people feel like it's like the lunch cabinet in elementary school, the lunch counter, where people feel that they own a pew, and they sit the same pew all the time. Lunch in elementary school, that's how it was with us. And going on, Trump and his administration have clashed with religious leaders, including him disagreeing with Reverend Marianne Budd's sermon at the day after his inauguration. You can go look that up. That was in the news for a while. Vice President J.D. Vance, who is a Catholic, has sparred with top U.S. leaders of his own church over immigration issues. And many clergy members across the country are worried about removal of churches from sensitive areas list, allowing federal officials to conduct immigration actions at places of worship. And in 2022, the National Prayer Breakfast split into two dueling events, the one on Capitol Hill, largely attended by lawmakers and government officials, and a larger private event for thousands at a ballroom. Split occurred, and they're not mentioning who was the other event. So we're coming towards the end. Let me put that in. Prayer breakfast. Today in Washington, D.C., President Trump. What were they? Just out of curiosity. All right. Mayor Eric Adams spent another morning in Washington, and his time with President paid off. Going on. Is that the prayer breakfast? Maybe whitehouse.gov will have something. I'm sorry. I should have prepped this before, but they piqued my curiosity here. Where is he? Do-do-do. National prayer breakfast. This was it from the Office of Communications. And you can go read it for yourself. And there was also a executive order about anti-Christian bias in this country. And I'm sure we'll find out tomorrow where the two prayer breakfasts were. Let's see. A large private event at a ballroom. Separate private. I have an idea who it was, but I don't want to say who it is because I might be wrong on that. Again, there's one that particularly that the Republican presidents go to with everything. So, that's what we have for today with this. Again, 4 days, 4 out of 5 days so far. Let's make it 5 days here for the broadcasting. So we're going to go right on over to the patriotic music, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.